to Dayan against the grain. He was a rabble-rousing socialist turned prominent anarchist. He influenced radicals on both sides of the Atlantic via his newspaper Freiheit and his fiery oratory. I'm C.S. Tom Hoyens, who is writing a biography of Johann Most, joins me, coming right up. And this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. My name is C.S. Song. A first-class agitator is one way to describe Johann Most, born in Bavaria in 1846. Following a stint in prison for insulting the emperor, Most was forced, amidst a Red Scare, to flee Germany. In London, he became editor of Freiheit, a radical newspaper that would become known for advocating what was called propaganda of the deed. Johann Most continued to edit Freiheit after he moved to New York City. His fiery oratory held listeners spellbound. So what initially turned Most toward radical politics? What prompted his shift from socialism to anarchism? Why did he advocate violence as a way of bringing about revolutionary change? And why did he later abandon that position? Most's life also serves as a lens through which to observe key developments in radical thinking and working class organizing in the late 19th century and beyond. Tom Hoyens is professor of history at Salisbury University in Maryland. He's currently writing a biography of Johann Most. Many of Tom's insights into Most's life and times are included in the new volume With Freedom in Our Ears, Histories of Jewish Anarchism, edited by Anna Elena Torres and Kenyon Zimmer. When Tom Hoyens and I connected recently, he began with these remarks about Johann Most's early years.
The first thing I need to mention is the fact that as a child, he had this operation on his jaw that had to be performed and basically saved his life, and it disfigured him for life, and that was a source of humiliation. And not until he could grow a beard did he overcome that. So that's sort of one thing. The other is the death of his mother at a young age, who seemed to really sort of value education and especially sort of free thought, and that's kind of a really important part of it. Johann Most became radicalized because he became an anti-clericalist, basically an atheist first. So by the time he discovers socialism, and he was probably in his early 20s, he had already sort of, you know, discarded what later he would always call the source of authoritarianism, which is basically theology and religion.
And what socialist ideas or writings was he first exposed to, you know, to the extent that he became excited about it and persuaded into a kind of radical politics?
This is actually quite a complex milieu. So we're talking about sort of the 1860s, let's say, and then into the 1870s. This is a period where Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, who a lot of people sort of know and associate with international socialism, but at that time they were not yet the great spokespersons for what they called scientific socialism. So there were a lot of other branches and a lot of other reformers who were fighting for the ear of the working classes, you might say. And these were often middle class, often just kind of liberals who sort of took up the plight of the working classes. And that's sort of the first type of, you might say, radical reform that that Must, as a probably a 20-year-old, was hearing. There is also the figure of Ferdinand LaSalle, who advocated a socialism where, you know, a lot of sort of the benefits would come from a stronger state. And you might say Johann Most, who you know, never had a formal education, but that's the first type of socialism that he encounters. And then he changes that, and this is a feature of his life. He changes a lot of times. He changes philosophy and sort of has to do a rethinking. But in Austria, he becomes part of the Social Democratic Party, of the German Social Democratic Party. Well, I think it goes through a number of name changes, which ends up being much more influenced by Marxist thoughts. And then by the time he goes into Germany, he is really a card-carrying member of the Socialist Party for a while, all through the 1870s.
You're right that in the 1870s, Johann Most gained notoriety in Bismarck's Germany. Notoriety for doing what?
So to answer that, I have to sort of go back a little bit. And this is the 1869-1870. So there is a short period where he becomes active in the socialist movement in Austria, before he is expelled from Austria and then is forced to go to Germany. And so to answer the question of why Johann Most becomes a very popular socialist agitator in Germany, the clue really lies in Austria. Austria is experiencing also this very early socialist movement, as opposed to just simply ideas floating around. In Austria, Most first becomes part of a movement. He's involved in speeches. These are mass demonstrations of working class, of unions, demanding civil liberties. Even this is even beyond just wages and conditions. But in Austria, which was an authoritarian state, they didn't even have the right of speech and assembly. So Most really gets this education in movement, of party life in a movement. And the Austrian government cracks down and essentially arrests the leaders. And Most wasn't even a primary leader, but he was starting to become an orator and becoming well known enough for the authorities to charge a number of them with high treason. And so there is this really somewhat, you know, in the media, kind of spectacular trial where they are convicted. They do not get the death penalty, but they are locked up. And then by chance, the Austrian government falls, a new government comes in, and they issue an amnesty. And then after a while, a number of them are expelled from Austria. And that is basically how Most arrives in Germany with these, you know, for the workers and for the other socialist leaders, these are like street credentials, right? So he has this fame because the trial was covered by German newspapers. And he has the fame, but he has also sort of honed these talents of his and just the fabulous way he could just rile up an audience. He was an amazing orator, and he had a peculiar style of it that were all kind of tried out and appreciated in Austria. And the socialist movement became a home for him in more than one way.
In 1876, Johann Most settled in Berlin. How did he make a living?
He was able to get a position as an editor of an independent socialist newspaper called the Berliner Freie Presse, or Berlin Free Press. Initially, he was sort of a co-editor. I think there were two or three other people, but he really became the main editor, which is this other talent of his that he really sort of hones and improves in Germany. So that's how he makes a living from then on, I might add, actually. Before that, he was actually a trained bookbinder, but it seems like he never really made a good living doing that.
Tom Hoyens is his name. He's professor of history at Salisbury University in Maryland. He's contributed a chapter titled Johann Most and Yiddish Anarchism, 1876 to 1906, to the new volume With Freedom in Our Ears, Histories of Jewish Anarchism. Tom is currently writing a biography of Johann Most, the German-born socialist and later anarchist who immigrated to the U.S. in 1882. I'm CS, and this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. Certainly we could talk all hour and all day about various aspects of Most's biography, his adventures, his travels, his experiences. I want to move to Most being forced to move to London in December 1878. Why was he forced to move there, or at least to leave Germany?
He was forced, as so many others at that time, he was forced to leave because of a new law that had passed in Germany, the anti-socialist law. That law was passed because there had been two attempts on the life of the emperor. And so the Chancellor Bismarck essentially used those, which were, you know, they were essentially terrorist attempts at the life of the monarch. Bismarck used that to get this law passed. Now, this law was perhaps by 20th century standards, you know, with all the sort of more modern dictatorships, perhaps this law was relatively mild, but it did prohibit any and all socialist activities, including publishing, meetings in Germany. And it also allowed for local authorities, such as city authorities in Berlin, for example, to declare what you might call like a martial law or a kind of a state of siege, and basically expel people from those local places. And so this is what happened to Most, who had just come out of jail and was basically told, you need to leave in 24 hours. Leave Berlin, that is. So he sort of wandered about a little bit. He went to Hamburg, which was also a kind of socialist center. Right at that time, there was another court somewhere, I think somewhere in the Rhineland, who indicted him. You know, essentially, he didn't really see another way out but to immigrate. There was actually a moment where he tried to raise some money to immigrate to the United States. But I think it was far cheaper to just make the shorter trip to London, where there was already a German community, a German radical community. That whole period was also significant because by that time, Most had essentially made some enemies within the socialist movement. And so when he gets out of jail, he's chased out of Berlin. He, somewhat to his astonishment, found that he didn't have a lot of friends among the socialist leadership, who were all hounded. So I think the anti-socialist law made it untenable, but he basically decided to leave Germany, and he was never to return to Germany.
Johann Most was jailed in Berlin for insulting the emperor. After moving to London, he became the editor of Freiheit, which means freedom. Tell us about that anarchist publication and the group that launched it in 1879.
Yeah, so the Freiheit newspaper becomes, he most often calls it his child, in sort of this loving attachment to it. The group that decides to start this German radical paper abroad, right there in London, it's the communist, but it's not the communism in the sense of Lenin, the Communist Workers Educational Society. This is a group that was quite old. It was founded in 1840, and it had been in London, and it had sort of welcomed all kinds of radicals, but mostly Germans. And so this is where Johann Most, in all his kind of desperation, arrives in London and is welcomed there. People knew who he was. And so the origins of Freiheit are I don't want to say disputed, but there are some different narratives here. Most at one point later on claims that he, on his own, decided, hey, we need to start up a new periodical. But I think that is not quite correct. It was really this, you might call a collective, that had already been planning on doing a periodical, because remember, the anti-socialist law in Germany had prohibited and had shut down all socialist newspapers. There was really nothing left. And so there was a need to start something up abroad and then smuggle this newspaper into Germany. And so this was that was the initiative. And they simply raised this possibility and asked Most, would you want to become the editor of this new periodical? And that's how that started. And also important to mention is that at first, Freiheit was not anarchist. German anarchism was a very tiny movement. I don't know if that's even a good word to use. There were a few individuals who kind of had anarchist leanings operating through Switzerland, but Most was not an anarchist. He was a social democrat, or we could just say a socialist. For a good year, I would say, Freiheit was a socialist newspaper. It really was the only, there was one small one in Brussels, but really the only socialist newspaper around.
I'm CS. This is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. Tom Hoyens joins me, Goyens. He teaches history at Salisbury University in Maryland. Well, there's more to say about Most before he actually arrives in New York City in late 1882. He was arrested in 1881 and sentenced to 16 months in prison for, I think, celebrating the Tsar's assassination. But I am curious about the transition of Johann Most, who is known as, you know, this fiery anarchist, and certainly he became one. What happened such that he veered away from social democratic and socialist thinking to anarchism, and when did that happen?
Yeah, so that is a very critical sort of period, which basically coincides with his few years in London. There are a number of things that happen there that causes him to radicalize. So when he arrives in London, this is the sort of the last month of December 78, and then in January 79, Freiheit begins as a socialist newspaper. One of the first things that happens is the somewhat surprising blowback that he gets from socialist deputies in Germany itself. So maybe explain a few things here. So the anti-socialist law in Germany, while it prohibited any socialist activism, it did allow the few socialist deputies in parliament to keep their seats. So they in their view, they're like, okay, this is a repressive law and we have to just ride it out. Let's not make any waves. And at some point, this hysteria, this sort of Red Scare will blow over and we will continue with our peaceful propaganda. And so that is sort of the voice in Germany. Now, in London, where Most also is detached from his constituency, Most himself had been a socialist deputy, by the way. So here he is in London, is kind of revived in the excitement of this new newspaper. And all he hears from Germany, from these leaders, is that how dare you build this new newspaper without our permission? Right? This is a dangerous venture. It is not sanctioned by the party. And don't you understand that Bismarck has spies in London, which he did? And so this is not good for our cause. Now, Most's point of view is, well, without this, there is really nothing. I thought we were a revolutionary party. And so Most is still a socialist, but he is convinced that propaganda needs to continue through this newspaper. But slowly, because London is this sort of metropolis, this cosmopolitan place, and Most is sort of ripped out of his sort of very German context, he meets all kinds of other people, especially Russian revolutionaries who have also landed in London, who were exiled, who have been forced out. And he learns about these Russian revolutionaries. Now, Russia was even more of an authoritarian state than Bismarckian Germany was. And he hears all of their revolutionary tactics, which really amount to terrorist attacks on the military in Russia, on the Tsar itself. And so little by little, he sort of absorbs this angle of revolutionary tactics that are being done in countries where a peaceful, legitimate movement has been outlawed. Now, at this point, we're talking here 1880. Most is not entirely convinced of this pure terrorist attacks. In fact, the two attempts on the life of the emperor, which prompted the anti-socialist law, he had condemned those attacks. But slowly he is essentially ignoring the party leadership. So I would say the year 1880 is a very important year because more and more he is adopting an independent voice in his newspaper, basically saying, look, you, the leadership in Germany, you are not really speaking for the movement. We will keep talking about what the Russians are doing. And we will continue our smuggling operation of Freiheit because it is being read by German workers. Maybe the last bit here to mention to answer this question is that he's definitely influenced by a few individuals who essentially persuade him to continue this independent voice of Freiheit no matter what might come. And so what is coming is that Most is eventually expelled from the party. But more and more, he doesn't really care. Another person is the Belgian anarchist, Victor Dave, who essentially is educating him for the first time on anarchist philosophy. There is also an earlier person, a German, August Reinsdorf, who he had dismissed earlier, but now, okay, let's see what he has to say. And so 1880 is an important moment where Moss transitions from socialism or social democracy to social revolutionary position. So not quite yet anarchist, but social revolutionary, where the focus is on tactics and increasingly on what sort of in a modern sense we might call by any means necessary.
That's the voice of Tom Hoyens. He's professor of history at Salisbury University. His books include Radical Gotham, Anarchism in New York City from Schwab's Saloon to Occupy Wall Street. He's editorial board member of the journal Anarchist Studies. We are talking about the research, it's a considerable amount, that he's done into Johann Most, the German-born socialist, later anarchist, who had a tremendous impact on anarchism in Europe and in the U.S. I'm C.S. Song, and this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. So Johann Most relocates to New York City in late 1882, and he arrives in a decade, the 1880s, that was an important period of time for anarchist organizing in the United States. Now, there's a ton to say about this, but give us a sense of why anarchist movements and organizations were sort of on the upswing in at least some of the decade of the 1880s.
Yes, it's a very important decade. It's true. The first thing I would maybe say is the term anarchist was not in widespread use yet. They are labels and they're very useful, but the 1870s and 1880s, there wasn't this strong demarcation yet between socialists and, or even there are different sort of branches and anarchism. There was certainly a common thread of a kind of working class movement for liberation. And this is, of course, in the context of of the enormous upswing in industrialization. So Marx and Engels are but a few voices in that. The impact of Marxism comes really later. Among other voices were, for example, Mikhail Bakunin, the Russian anarchist, who had a famous fight with Marx. And maybe that is sort of a little gateway into the 1880s. Bakunin is already passed away, and Marx dies in 83, I believe. So, you know, so the 1880s, even the late 1870s, is kind of important for the formation of the anarchist movement, both in Europe and the United States. There's actually some interesting differences between the formation out of the broader socialist movement in Europe versus the United States. In Europe, the anarchists basically emerge because of the suppression, the repression, I might say, in European authoritarian states of anything that was left, right? Any socialist movement. And the anarchists basically were socialists, but they started to contemplate different kinds of tactics to continue propaganda efforts in the face of increasing and, I might say, bloody and violent repression. So in the United States, where there wasn't really a strong military apparatus or a political police or secret police, that was really a European thing. The broader socialist movement had to, the issues there were basically the difficulties in fighting for political power and elections and fraud and corruption. So the anarchist movement emerges out of the socialist movement, And the reasons in the United States have really to do with political corruption and with some philosophical differences. You might say within the socialist movement, you have what you might call more radical socialist, a wing that is fed up with the obsession of the other socialist with elections and political power. And so that wing is getting then nourished by this philosophy that had been circulating in Europe of basically libertarian, but not in the modern American sense, but in a sense where the idea of power itself, of political power, of the state itself, was a problem, not just capitalism. And so anarchism sort of embraces those two, and you might really add the church to it as well. So they sort of coalesce around this idea that any kind of coercive top-down power is bad, including for the propaganda efforts itself. So not only is it to be avoided in a future society, but as part of the movement itself. And so you have this, at first, a slow kind of more radical socialist wing that starts to call itself social revolutionary, but then embraces the term anarchism, which was sort of an older term that was kind of an insult. So Johann Most, as he arrives in the United States, he basically right at that moment identifies himself as anarchist. And this is where his impact is so important, because he embraces the term and he sort of gathers around him. He's sort of the glue of that sort of radical wing of disillusioned socialists, and that becomes sort of the new anarchist movement.
And Johann Most and his ideas about this change in time, and we'll talk about that, but at that point, what were, in his mind, the limits in terms of the amount of violence that could and ought to be used in order to do propaganda, in order to propagate the message that revolution and the taking down of the state or of the authorities was critical, was necessary for emancipation?
Yeah, so this is a really critical part of Most's life. And it's probably to some people or to some listeners is a controversial part. Before answering that, I have to sort of sketch a little bit of an important context. When Most arrives in the United States, his mindset is that of an exile. He's not really a sort of an immigrant in the sense of, you know, I'm going to sort of pitch my tent here and start a new life in a new country. Most is disillusioned, is disgruntled, and he arrives with scars from European repression. So his change of heart, so his evolution from socialist or social democracy to social revolutionary stance, and then towards anarchism, occurs in London. And in terms of political philosophy, it's a rather immature kind of anarchism. He's kind of influenced mostly by Bakunin's ideas, but also by Blanqui, who was not an anarchist, but a French revolutionary thinker who he basically advocated that the entire engine for revolutionary change should be in small conspiratorial groups who do action, violent or not, and so that he's really that's kind of the extent to his sort of early anarchism. He actually spends very little time elaborating on the philosophy of it, on the future society. It's all about tactics. And he embraces dynamite, which had sort of been a relatively recent invention. His mindset is, look, European impression. And so just to sketch this for the listeners. So Europe at this time, almost all European nations were armed to the teeth. This was a militaristic bourgeois societies dominated by a few great powers. Nearly all of these societies had secret polices. I mean, maybe Britain was somewhat of an exception, but even there, Scotland Yard was put in the field against anarchists. So this is Most's world, right? So he is convinced that this has to change. All avenues for peaceful activism have been closed off by these governments. And he is tired of bringing a knife to a gunfight. And so he begins advocating this wonderful new tool, in his view, of dynamite, which is seen as the sort of working class weapon. It's been used in Russia with some success, in his view. Russia is probably the most repressive state, and so he sees, well, what other method can we use? That it's of course we have to use this. Okay, so this is the mindset with which he comes to the United States, which is also an industrializing nation, but it is very different in that sort of political sense. There is no real centralized power in a way, right? There is much more freedom of speech, of assembly. There's no secret polices. So Most simply continues his rhetoric. He does two speaking tours, and his mindset is really focused on Europe, even in the United States. He's not really thinking of settling down. There's several letters he writes to people in Germany, like, I'm coming back, but I can't right now. I'm just sort of, you know, doing anarchist propaganda into Europe, but from faraway New York. So Most in 1883, 84, 85... is advocating terrorism, mostly geared towards Europe, mostly towards Germany. He's aiding certain activists who are prepared to do certain deeds in Germany. And so this is an episode in Most's political life that is dominated by his views on, or his endorsement of, terrorism, which is a word we now associate with perhaps with 9/11, and you know, we have to see it in its 19th century context, but it is perhaps a little more of a controversial period in his life. And I'm sure we will talk about Haymarket, but after Haymarket, Most really changes a lot of his opinions and revises a lot of his tactics, I think, to his credit.
I'm CS. This is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. Tom Hoyens joins me. He teaches history at Salisbury University. His books include Beer and Revolution, The German Anarchist Movement in New York City, 1880 to 1914, and Storm in My Heart, Memories from the Widow of Johann Most. And we are talking about his research into the life and ideas and activities of Johann Most. And some of that is part of an article Tom contributed to the new volume, With Freedom in Our Ears, Histories of Jewish Anarchism. Yeah, Haymarket, by which is meant the events surrounding the throwing of a bomb at a labor demonstration in Chicago's Haymarket Square in May 1886, amidst strikes and rallies for an 8-hour workday. Several police officers and several workers were killed on the night of May 4th, 1886, and eight anarchists were rounded up and brought to trial. Four of them were hanged the following year on November 11th. How did Most react to these developments, and how did his thinking change as a result?
Initially, Most was in hiding because he had delivered a speech. This is almost a week or so before Haymarket began. He had delivered a speech and was indicted, but the police couldn't find him. He was indicted with inciting to riot. And he sort of went into hiding. He stayed in Manhattan, but then eventually was arrested. And it is around that time that Haymarket happens. So he was actually already in custody. And he initially, when he heard about the bombing, he actually thought this is great. This is an anarchist resistance tactic, right? So because May 1st had been announced as the great transition date for the 8-hour day movement, it sort of came and passed with not too much trouble, but then there were strikes going on in Chicago and workers were shot by the police. And this is how Haymarket began, right? This is how the meeting was organized as a protest against police brutality on May 4th. So when Most hears this, and, you know, he hears this through newspaper reports, there's no Twitter or anything. So his initial reaction is, this is great. This is what we want. Enough with police brutality. We're going to retaliate with our weapons. So his own trial kind of tracks the trial of the Haymarket defendants. And so the bombing happens on May 4th, but what's also really important is in August of 86, the Haymarket defendants are convicted and get the death penalty. And this is a huge blow. People had not expected this. So at this point, Most is in jail for 1 year. And he hears this probably with snippets, and he's sort of allowed a few newspapers in his cell. And so this is the context. He follows this whole trial, and he cannot believe that in the United States, this, you know, he was a little bit cynical, but there was still some freedom of speech and assembly, that a jury would convict these men. Some had not even been at the meeting, and would actually put them to death. And he goes through a period of a profound anger and disillusion. And so when he is released, I think that is when he's released in New York, but the Haymarket defendants haven't been put to death yet. But that moment, so we're now in 1887, is when he really changes his ideas about the United States, of this republic that can be as cruel as any of the authoritarian states in Europe. Now, this is his view. And then when they are basically put to death in November 87, Most is really a different person then, and changes his philosophy of anarchism. He remains an anarchist, but he does change his views on tactics, especially in the United States.
Well, to realize that the U.S. government, or, you know, local, state, federal authorities could exhibit a kind of brutality that he originally thought was confined to places in Europe, wouldn't that incline someone to, or incline Most to, think that, you know, violent revolution of the violent deed is more necessary in the U.S., that this strategy, this tactic is ever more important as part of one's arsenal, the arsenal of radicals?
Yeah, that's a very good question, very interesting question. And it's something that I'm going to address in this biography. You're right. It is an interesting fact that Most in 1887, and by this time he basically has decided, well, I'm just going to be living in the United States. I'm not going back to Europe. But it is interesting that he really abandons propaganda by deed, which in his mind had always meant really any means necessary. It could be a solitary act of violence. It could be an assassination. It could be a bombing of a police station, which actually happened in Frankfurt in 1884. So he really abandons that. In some speeches, he says, you know, hey, we are still advocating self-defense, which I would argue is an important difference, right? I mean, there's self-defense. We will defend ourselves, but we are not. He has several pieces that he publishes where he's basically saying, look, this violence, even arming the working classes, which was a big thing with him in the previous years. In fact, he skillfully made use of the Second Amendment rights. But he basically says, look, this doesn't work in the United States. And I think there is a personal story here, because as he is in a New York City penitentiary and Haymarket is unfolding, meaning the defendants are put on trial, there's a Red Scare in Chicago, there's then the devastation of the death sentences. As he is learning all of this behind bars, he does realize that the prosecution in Chicago is making efforts to have him extradited to Chicago. Now, this doesn't happen. There is one newspaper, and I do urge caution in just relying on one newspaper, but there's one newspaper that sort of mentions that essentially the district attorneys both in Chicago or Cook County and in New York City do not like each other. And so essentially, I think Most realizes that his incarceration in New York City may well have saved his life. And I can only imagine what that does, right, on a personal level. But I think there is a genuine, this is true for his entire life. If I sort of have a bird's eye view, I zoom out a little bit. I see this a lot with Johann Most. He constantly reevaluates, he adopts new ideas. He never pretends to be this highly educated, I am set in my ways. He always reevaluates. And in that sense, it makes sense that he does the same thing in 1887. And there's a really interesting development that comes out of this, where he turns his absolute bitterness towards the United States. He turns it into almost an optimism, which is really interesting. Most is, like so many German immigrants actually, derides American culture. He thinks it's shallow, it's materialistic, there's no idealism. It's all about money and going out west. And he has that sort of condescension about it. But in the wake of Haymarket, he comes up with this really interesting analysis. He says eventually, we're now in 1888, 1889, I would say, maybe 1890. He flat out says, you know what? I think the United States is probably the best country for anarchist propaganda. And here is why. Because in Europe, the old socialist movement, the old reformers, they've always looked to a republic as the way for the future, right? They are in Europe, monarchies all around them. It's the republic that will save us. And the United States in particular is a beacon. And most sort of reasons, look, I've been in both. The United States is a republic. It's 100 years old. It's not working. It nearly failed in the Civil War. It's now completely taken over by monopolists. So, therefore, now we can see that even a republic doesn't work. And he links this to his anarchist philosophy. And he says, see, it's the state. No matter what form it takes, it doesn't work. So precisely in the United States, we have to continue, not with violence, but with revolutionary education, with propaganda by the word.
Well, we have to leave it right there. Tom Hoyens is professor of history at Salisbury University. He's currently working on a biography of Johann Most. That book is under contract with the University of Illinois Press. His books include Beer and Revolution, The German Anarchist Movement in New York City, 1880 to 1914, and Storm in My Heart, Memories from the Widow of Johann Most. Tom also writes a free Substack newsletter called Anarch Histories, Uncovering the World Anarchists Made. We have a link to that and other information about Tom on our website, againstthegrain.org. Again, his last name is spelled G-O-Y-E-N-S. Thanks so much, Tom, for your work and for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed this.
And this is CS, suggesting the important thing is not to stop questioning, and we hope you'll join us next time. Against the Grain is produced by Sasha Lilly and C.S. Song. You can visit us online at againstthegrain.org, where you'll find on-demand and downloadable audio, resources, and more. You can check us out on Facebook at Against the Grain Radio, and you can follow us on Twitter at Radio Against.